You're listening to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I'm registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
And I'm neuroscience PhD student Tariq Youssef. And for the next hour, we're going to tackle popular nutrition topics from a scientific lens, promoting fact over fiction with no BS. Welcome back.
Welcome back again,
it's Friday.
Guys. Yeah, it's Friday. Wow, isn't this fun? Two episodes in 1 week. Get used to it.
This is amazing. Yeah, everyone's like, oh my gosh, getting off work early today. Yeah.
Summer Friday. All right. Well, welcome back to the No BS Nutrition Podcast. I am registered dietitian Hannah McGee.
Oh, yeah. I keep forgetting, like, we're still introducing ourselves. And I am PhD student, neuroscience lover, friend to many, family to all, Tariq Youssef. And thank you so much for listening to our podcast all about nutrition and debunking. And thanks for staying on for the fourth season. And if you're new, we've got all kinds of episodes for you to choose from and select from, or just binge straight from the beginning. So please go and enjoy those. Yeah. And thanks for being here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We are really excited to chat with you all today. So like we mentioned in the last episode, we've changed our format up a little bit. And we're going to be releasing two episodes per week, just in case you missed our spiel in the last episode that came out on Wednesday. And the Friday episode is going to be a little more in-depth, a little more nutrition education heavy, or, you know, focused on specific topics in nutrition and, you know, the diet world and wellness world. And yeah, it's kind of like in our last episodes we had, or in our last seasons, you know, we'd have the BS of the week at the start, and then we'd kind of have our main topic, which was a little bit longer and a little bit, I don't know, a little bit more in depth, a little bit more science
dramatic.
Heavy. Dramatic. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what these Friday episodes are going to be. And you guys can have them for the weekend, you know, whether you're, you know, you're going on a walk or you're going on a road trip or you're cleaning the house and listening to a podcast. Mm. This is the perfect episode for that. So today we're going
to... Or you're taking notes furiously.
Yes, absolutely.
This is important information.
Yes, yes.
Everyone takes notes, right, when they listen to this?
Yeah, totally. How could I forget that? Today we are going to be talking about... we're going to talk about five disordered eating habits that tend to get normalized by diet culture. Okay, and before we get into the episode, I want to give a little bit of a content warning or a trigger warning for anyone who may have struggled or is struggling with disordered eating or an eating disorder, and you're in a place in your journey where, you know, listening to a conversation about disordered eating habits or certain, you know, restrictive behaviors might not serve you. I recommend that you skip this episode, you know, listen to the one that we release on Monday, listen to an older episode, or come back, or not Monday, Wednesday, or come back on next Wednesday and tune in for the next episode. Just looking at
it. And it's totally understandable. There. Don't feel bad for doing that.
Absolutely.
I get it. Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I guess I'll start off this episode about certain disordered eating habits by giving you just a little bit of a definition of disordered eating, because
please.
It's different from eating disorders. So disordered eating is basically a term that describes different or a range of irregular eating behaviors that may or may not warrant a diagnosis of a specific eating disorder. So, you know, sometimes disordered eating habits either like lead to eating disorders, or they may even be characteristic of eating disorders. But then there are disordered eating habits as well that exist alone, and they're just, you know, they are kind of what make up disordered eating and not necessarily an eating disorder.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's kind of like disordered eating might reflect some symptoms, but eating disorders are specific diagnoses of like multiple symptoms that over time a clinician has decided warrant a specific diagnosis for treatment.
Yes, exactly. So eating disorders are, you know, diagnosed conditions or diseases that are diagnosed with very narrow and specific criteria. And yeah, sometimes certain symptoms of eating disorders, like you said, are disordered eating habits. But yeah, like I said, disordered eating habits can be exclusive from eating disorders too. So just to kind of run through before we get into the five kind of habits that I want to talk about, some kind of signs and symptoms of disordered eating may include, but are not limited to, things like frequent dieting or anxiety associated with specific foods, skipping meals, chronic weight fluctuations, rigid, like really rigid rituals or routines around food and exercise. And that's kind of something that I'm going to touch on in a couple minutes. Feelings of guilt and shame associated with eating, a preoccupation with food or weight or body image that negatively affects your quality of life. A feeling of loss of control around food or compulsive eating habits. Yeah. And using exercise or food restriction, fasting or purging to make up for bad foods that were consumed. So those are some symptoms or signs of disordered eating, but that's definitely not an exhaustive list. So, and there's some ones
that's
that...
I think it's, you've chosen some really broad things to identify there. And I see like different stages of my life reflected in different ones of those. So I think a lot of people will be able to relate probably.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And me too. Let's get into like the five habits that I want to touch on. So, and they all kind of relate to like to the list of signs and symptoms that I just ran through. But these are like kind of specific, more specific habits. So number one, the first disordered eating habit that is very normalized by diet culture is the counting, tracking, and weighing of your food. So, you know, whether it's counting calories or counting macros or like keeping a food journal of all of your
Weight
food,
Watchers points.
Weight Watchers, Noom, you know, all of those things or yeah, having to like weigh out or measure out every single morsel of your food. That to me is an example of like rigid rituals around food and exercise or a preoccupation with food. You know, if you have to stick to a very specific number every day or meet or stay under, you know, a number every day or, you know, weigh out or measure out your food in order to meet that. That to me falls under a rigid ritual or routine around food and exercise. What do you think?
Yeah, totally. And, you know, this makes me think of something that we've touched on before, but I think maybe warrants repeating now that it's been probably several seasons since we've talked about this. But these habits that have been normalized are, and diet culture in general, is a conversation that still doesn't take place in the mainstream and is still something that's kind of niche in general. Because diet culture is so prevalent that the main conversation is actually just a bunch of disordered conversations rather than ones that are pursuing health.
Yeah.
So the if you're listening because you're interested in nutrition and maybe like you don't really relate to any of these things, or you know somebody who like doesn't really think that diet culture is real or doesn't really think that any of this stuff is that like that prevalent that it's actually a societal problem, I think that's more to do with these people's probably rare individual experiences because of a lot of privileges like being a man or you know, what, having like won the genetic lottery or so. Mm-hmm. I mean, so many other, or having access to so many, like, it's to nutritious foods, which is, you know, problematic for some people or difficult for some people, or having access to recreation, which is difficult for some people. Those people just have blinders on for whatever reason. This stuff is actually so prevalent, and like so many people deal with these things. And I'm connecting to exactly what you were going to say, because the counting, the weighing, the noom, the WW, so many people do that. Like, I think you probably picked this for number one because it's probably the most popular thing. Mm. And it's, I think, an activity that some people just don't know any other way. Mm-hmm. Like, this is kind of like how they were, maybe not brought up necessarily by their parents, but just by society and just by, you know, societal norms. A lot of us have been programmed to think, and I'm using air quotes, health first with respect to our food, but in fact not really thinking about health, but just thinking about being thin or looking a certain way.
Yeah, and the reason that I, you know, like you said, wanted this to be number one is because it is so prevalent. Like, people associate, like, when they think of like going on a healthy diet or like making changes for health, they think that the healthy thing to do is to start counting calories or is to track macros or is to have to like weigh out and measure out, you know, your peanut butter or whatever it is, or your olive oil or things like that. And that's disordered. Like, that you don't have to do that to, for health. And I would take it so far to say that those habits can can be unhealthy, because, you know, it usually leads you down a road of like being very rigid with those things. Because, you know, if you're counting calories, there's usually a number that an app spits out to you, or that some, you know, someone has calculated for you, that you need to stick to or stay under. And that is problematic for a lot of reasons. But what always blows my mind is that, and I fell prey to this at one point in my life, what always blows my mind is that we don't do the same things every day. We do not, like, you know, we all have routines and things like that, but we don't do the exact same amounts of activity every day. For people who menstruate, like, we experience so many shifts, hormonal shifts, all throughout the month. And that affects our caloric needs, like how much energy our bodies are using, and you know, our activity, all sorts of things. So to think that you just need to stick to X number of calories every day, like, I have to like shake my head. Like, you need different amounts every day. So that's why, one, counting or tracking things doesn't make sense to me, because you don't need that one number of calories every single day. And I think that that ends up leading to, if you hit your calorie limit or your macro limit or whatever, and you're still hungry, it's like, oh my gosh, what's wrong with me? You know, my body should be happy. Like, this is the number I calculated out, and I should be full. And then it kind of spirals into this like guilt and shame that you're still hungry, or, you know, then you start to believe you're addicted to food and like all this like stuff. It's just it's a snowball effect. Right. So, that kind of, in short, is why I put that as number one, and why that is a disordered eating habit that's normalized by diet culture. And I feel like that's a little bit probably controversial, because I know that there's even dietitians out there who like help clients lose weight through tracking calories. But I don't agree with it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm so excited to hear what you have next, since that was such a good one.
Okay.
To
start with. Okay. So the second one, the second habit that is quite normalized in our society is skipping meals in preparation for events.
Oh my gosh. I hadn't even thought about that, but yeah. Okay, you keep going. Sorry, yeah, I have like, so much to say, because I watch so many wedding shows.
right. So whether it is like saving up for you know, you've got Thanksgiving dinner later today, and, you know, I'm sure mm-hmm. everyone's heard, like, oh, well, you just save up your calories so you can eat as much as you want tonight. That's one example. But yeah, another example is like, you know, maybe it's not just a day, but maybe you're going on a trip or you have like something coming up in a week. And mm-hmm. So people will do cleanses or things like that leading up to them. And, you know, that's, again, very normalized in society. Like, I was listening to a podcast the other day and someone was, I don't know if they were getting, yeah, someone was, they have a wedding coming up. I think it was a wedding podcast or a bridal podcast. And one of the hosts said, like, I don't know, mentioned losing weight for the wedding. Like, oh, I could afford to lose 5 pounds or something like that. And the other host was like, oh, you just have to do a juice cleanse the week before and you'll be fine.
Oh, my God.
And I was like, no, I'm never listening to this again. Like, I was just like, ugh, like, right? It's just so normalized. Like, she just shrugged yeah. and was like, oh, like, you'll just do a juice cleanse. You'll be fine. But in reality, that, again, leads to not only is that disordered in itself, but it also leads to overeating down the line, right? If you mm-hmm. skip meals, that's just like telling your body to overeat later because you're starving and your body, right. you know, gets used to knowing like, okay, wait, there's no food today. So when you do get food, it's like, we got to save up or we got to have more in case this happens again, this starvation happens again. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's, what are your thoughts on that one?
So this makes me think of a lot of things, of course, wedding shows. So my TV watching is really, really sad. Like I watch maybe like 40 minutes of TV almost every night right before bed, just as I'm winding down and, you know, maybe like tidying up or getting some emails done. And it's almost exclusively bridal shows because I love wedding shows because I love weddings, so much fun. And I love, you know, the drama. I will say, they're not highfalutin wedding shows. They're like the trashy early 2000s Canadian reality television wedding shows where obviously everybody's faking. Like the producer definitely like wrote out a script. There's fake drama. People are mad for no reason. It's just all made up. Yeah. It's just fun to watch. And one of the most recent episodes that I watched, a bride spent, it was a few thousand dollars for several weeks of service from a diet clinic. So she, you know, she it was like this intense exercise regimen, cut out all foods. There's this one scene where she was talking to the nurse from the clinic, and the nurse is like, no this, no that, no potatoes, no beans, no bread, no pasta, no blah blah blah, no rice, no, like literally just like listing off no. And you know, the bride can't taste her the food, like at the tasting, like for her wedding.
Oh my
and,
gosh.
All this other stuff. I think one of the bridesmaids said, like, just like put it in your mouth and taste it or something. Ugh. Like, you know what I mean? And then at her bachelorette or her stagette, like she couldn't have any of the cake or, you know, or like she couldn't drink any alcohol.
Oh my God. That is just, that sounds miserable.
And that, but here's the thing. So all that is one thing, right? There's a lot of problematic things there, but all that is one thing. Then on the day of her wedding, she's just binging out on carbs. Like she hasn't had carbs in so long. She's binging out on carbs. Right. And that is exactly like, that's like the perfect example of why this kind of behavior is so problematic, right? Because it's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. Because like you were saying, like our lives are different every day. And treating ourselves like these machines is not sustainable in the long run.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just to see her like binge at the end of that, I was just like, oh my gosh, like I should have seen this coming.
Right, right. No, that's so true. And you're so right. Yeah, whether it's for the wedding, I feel like that's such a common story is like the bride diets mm-hmm. or, you know,
like to even buy a dress that's smaller yeah, yeah. than what yeah. your size is before you get married. Yeah. So you have no other option yeah. basically.
And that's another thing that's very normalized. Like I've heard stories of, brides going to going dress shopping, and like the dress sales person saying, like, you plan to lose weight before the wedding, right? Like, like you're gonna lose 5 pounds.
You are joking. So, like, oh, like, my gosh.
That's so common that they'll say, like, oh, right, like, you must be, just because it's so normalized for
right. Women. Every bride is so, like
just
yeah.
want to lose weight for the wedding. Not like,
does anyone say that about the grooms?
No,
never.
Definitely not. And yeah, like you said, it just always leads to overeating, which then can also perpetuate disordered eating because, you feel guilty. Like whether it's Thanksgiving or your wedding day, mm-hmm. you save up, you starve yourself, and then you binge, you eat as much as you want on Thanksgiving dinner or at your wedding or on your honeymoon or whatever. And then you feel like shit afterwards. That kind of binge or that period of overeating wears off. You feel like crap because you ate until you were so uncomfortable, because you mm-hmm. were so deprived. And then you feel really guilty because you feel gross and you feel full. And then that just perpetuates you to want to diet again or want you to, like, quote, yeah. detox or whatever. And that, again, just like perpetuates this cycle of, like, binge restrict, disordered eating. You get the point. So
yeah, it also makes me think of
no, go ahead.
It also makes me think of the phrase, like, summer bodies are built in the winter or whatever, quote unquote getting your body ready for the summer, because, like, you have to look whatever, like, society's idea of hot is by the time summer comes around.
Oh, I've come across, like, TikTok videos where there's this one that is just so insanely, like, just sad, but, like, also potentially harmful. It was this girl who was like, what I eat in a day to lose weight for the summer after quarantine or something like that, like, or after COVID. And it was like a very low calorie number that was definitely not enough. And she was working out every day too.
I'm laughing because you just reminded me of a big ass salad or whatever it's called from that stupid diet.
Yeah. That eat like a bear.
Yeah.
And she was like just eating way too little, and people were comments, like, some people, there were some comments on it. People were saying, like, that's clearly not enough food. And her response mm-hmm. was, well, I ate enough, like, over the last year and a half. I think I can afford, to eat less right now or something like that. And I was like, sweetie, that's not how it
works. That was her argument?
That's not how it works. Like, this is going to perpetuate. Like, this is going to happen down the road. You're going to binge. You're going to overeat because you're starving yourself.
I've actually been eating for 28 years. So I think I have a few years off now. I've been eating my whole life. Yeah. So I'm just going to wait for a minute.
Right, exactly. So yeah, I was just like, Oh, honey, that's not how it works. But anyway, she's going to have to learn it the hard way.
That's famously what happens. People eat until they turn 50. And then just from there until 90, whatever, people don't eat.
You don't have to eat. You didn't know?
She's right.
Like,
yeah.
Best kept secret.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's number two. Moving on to number three is suppressing hunger with water, gum, coffee, or other activities like brushing your teeth or knitting, what have you. I used to read this in, like, health magazines, like, if you know, to prevent you from snacking at night, just chug water or chew a piece of gum, and that is so disordered, that is so messed up. Or brush your teeth, like, that'll get the, you know, having that minty toothpaste taste in your mouth will make you not want to eat or whatever. That is disordered eating. If you are hungry, you need to eat. That is the only way to truly suppress your hunger. Again, your hunger will come back around if you don't listen to it, and it will come back stronger and, you know, more
maybe
angry.
A few years later, but it will come back.
No, it will. And again, like, it just perpetuates that disordered binge restrict cycle, because eventually your body's going to want that food that it deserves and that it needs, and it will drive you to get it somehow, and usually that's through overeating or binging down the line. So, you know, my number one tip to you is always, if you're hungry, you know what to do, eat. And again, like, it's, I think a lot of times at, you know, at nighttime, people are like, oh, well, I ate so much today. Like, why should I be hungry again? Like, I really shouldn't be eating, or I shouldn't be hungry. And again, what I'll say to that is, we need different amounts of food on different days. So there might be days where you finish dinner and you feel satisfied until bed and until the next morning. But there might also be nights where you feel hungry, like you mm-hmm. did more activity, or maybe you, like, without knowing, ate a little bit less for dinner or whatever. So I think it's really important to kind of nip that in the bud and, like, eat when you're hungry, because it, again, will just spiral into something less favorable down the line.
Totally, totally. I totally agree. That's a great point.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Number four. Okay. Making up for eating something via food restriction or exercise. So this was actually something that was mentioned in that list of, like, signs and symptoms of disordered eating earlier, but yeah, using food, using exercise or, you know, some sort of food restriction to make up for, you know, an amount of food that you ate or a certain, in quotations, bad food that you ate, is something that is super common and, like, seen as healthy. Like, you know, if you've ever been in a fitness class or group fitness class, there's a chance that you've heard an instructor say, like, you know, earn those donuts, or, like, you know, it's leading up to a holiday and they're like, you know, burn your calories so you can have turkey dinner later, or whatever it is. There was an email, like, that went around from F45, the gym
or
whatever. Oh, yes,
it's a workout gym. Yeah, workout, it's like routine, a boutique at a specific, fitness. Like Orange Theory or whatever.
Yeah, it's kind of like Orange Theory. It's a boutique kind of fitness studio. And they do, like, 8-week diet challenges and stuff too. Don't even get me started on that. But an email went around from them. I can't remember if it was after, I don't remember what, if it was after a certain holiday or if it was just, like, because things were opening up post-COVID. And they were like, 8 too much, come see us and we'll fix that, or something like that. Like, in their email to their subscribers. And so that just shows, like, how normalized the idea of making up what you ate with food restriction or exercise is. Like, it's just, like, normal for a fitness instructor to say that, or for a gym to send that email to their customers, which is,
it makes me
up.
Mad because that's so guilt trippy, like, on a Monday morning to open up your inbox and to see that email first thing, that, like, sets up your whole day.
Oh, totally. It's just, like, and it or, you know, maybe you're leading into a vacation or a holiday weekend, like, you're going in the Christmas holidays and the fitness instructor says something about, like, you know, earning your holiday sweets or things like that. Like, that just sets you up to feel guilty the whole holidays if you don't work out every day to, like, to compensate, you know?
Yeah.
So it's sad how, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Ingrained in our society that habit alone is, or that idea of making up for what you ate is. So that's number four. Last one, I'm getting there. We're working through this list. So number five, the fifth disordered eating habit that is normalized by society. This one, actually, like, the more that I'm reading it, I'm kind of like, it might actually be the least normalized one in this list, but let me know what you think. So this one is missing out on social plans to maintain your food and exercise routine.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So this has been me before, and I've heard other people say this to other people who have done this before, but, like, if someone says, you know, I can't come, I have to work out in the morning, or sorry, I can't come, I don't want to eat X, Y, and Z, or whatever, I've heard someone say like, oh, good for you. Wow, you're being so healthy. Like, oh, like you're so healthy, so you won't come out to eat with us, or you're so healthy that you won't stay out late because you have to work out in the morning. And I think this one is like, there's a line, because sometimes I think like from an intuitive standpoint, or like a gentle nutrition standpoint, you might opt not to go somewhere because you don't want to be hungover in the morning, or you don't want to be tired in the morning, or you did sign up for a workout class that you want to go to, and like that's
you
like
have
an intuitive decision. Like, but I think when it's like a very rigid thing and a consistent thing, to the point where you're constantly saying no, you're constantly missing out on things, and it's like, you know, it could even be affecting your relationships, or your social relationships, then it can be problematic. What do you think?
It just makes me think of what the intention behind it all is. Mm-hmm. If your intention is to, you know, maintain what a healthy lifestyle looks like for you, and to, you know, be happy with the choices that you're making, then that's probably fine. And it's probably not going to mean that you say no to everything, actually, if you're doing it that way. But if your intention is to look skinny, then
Or you're probably going about it
in a disordered way.
Yeah, I think if it's like you're afraid to eat too many calories, or you're afraid to eat a certain food, or you're afraid to miss your workout, and that's going to like cause you like mental distress or like turmoil if you were to go and do those things, then I think we have an issue.
Our generations just like, we had no chance. Like the past two generations of people on the planet, like the way that society has gone, we just had no chance not to run into these things.
Oh, 100%.
And I feel really bad for, especially like for younger kids who are experiencing all this stuff for the first time, or becoming aware of it for the first time, because it's really hard. And like, you know, it's hard to blame anybody for picking up any of these habits at all, because it's, to them, they might have just learned it as normal. So the journey out of all of that is not maybe the easiest, but it totally is possible. And like, it's also okay to be on the journey to loving yourself. Like, loving yourself can be the journey. Like, you don't have to wake up one day and just say like, oh, I love myself now for the rest of time. We're all good.
Yeah.
It's okay to be on that journey for a while.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think that, you know, we're not sitting here reading off this list of habits going like, you're like bad for doing, like, you need to stop right now. No. And I think we just want to bring awareness to things that are very normalized by diet culture in our society. And also I think we can both attest to having history with some of these habits.
Absolutely.
Like I absolutely do.
And this is also good to like, just as refreshers for our minds, to think about how we react to things that people say, or how our reactions might support or not support certain things, like whether like saying nothing is actually a bad thing, or saying something might be hurting in a specific moment. Mm-hmm. So it's good, because like, it to tackle diet culture, like, it takes all of us together.
Yeah.
So I think these are really good refreshers.
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. It takes all of us together, and it takes an awareness. And I think that the more aware that we can make other people of these kind of hidden, disordered, like irregular habits that are actually normalized and seen as regular or normal in our society, you know, the more that we can start to kind of overturn all of that stuff that you said that we grew up with that like gave us no chance, right?
Like next time you see a bride and you see someone who's about to tell the bride not to eat something, or to think about the dress, or to buy a dress that's smaller, like intervene, right? If you can, like those are the moments where we can start to make those small changes that will hopefully build up over time.
Yeah. And like, no one's perfect. There's been plenty of times that a workout instructor has made a comment about burning off what they ate. And I didn't say anything. Like, I didn't go up to them. Oh, yeah. I just rolled my eyes and was like, okay, well, I'm not coming back to you. But this is like empowering me. Next time I want to go up and I want to say something and I want to be like, you know what? That's potentially harmful and we don't need to earn our food. And I'm saying that here. So next time I hear someone say that, I'm going to address it.
When Hannah and I are in a room together, we are the most powerful duo in the world. And yeah. We will come up to whoever it is. Yeah. So it's nice to have a friend and an ally to be able to do
that stuff. Yeah, we always kind of like, we do like the look. Like someone will say something like diet culture-y or diet-y. Yeah. And we like look at each other and then we're
are we
like,
going to say something?
Yeah, we're kind of like, are we addressing it here or later?
Yeah.
Yeah, so... All right. And just lastly, you know what? Yeah, if you guys can, you know, if you resonate with some of those things or you relate with those things, and maybe you're currently struggling with some of those habits, like Tarek said, like it is possible to get through it, to come out on the other side. And, you know, hopefully we can support you in doing that. But I also think, you know, if you need to, please seek, you know, professional support, one-on-one support. Whether it's from a doctor, a dietitian, a therapist, someone like that who is trained in the areas of disordered eating and eating disorders, because there are lots of people out there that can do that.
Well, I have to thank you, Hannah, because that was a lovely topic to end the week with.
Amazing. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed it. I think now I have a question for you.
Please ask me, please.
Tell me what's been tasty for you this week.
Okay, I have two things to say.
Okay.
One is that as a podcast, we are suing President's Choice because they sent out an email earlier today talking about summer salads. And people who listen to the podcast will know that that's something that I invented, the phrase summer salad.
Patented by us.
No one has made a salad in the summer before me. And then my actual tasty is, you know, I finally bit the bullet, Hannah. And I made croissants from scratch. And I'm not talking rough puff. I'm talking I flattened the butter, folded the layers multiple times, left it overnight, rolled the croissants, baked them fresh that morning. It was so nice to have a croissant right out of the oven. I still have a ways to go with the shaping. But I definitely got the taste right, definitely got the layers right. Got the bake right, so I'm super happy about that.
That is amazing. I've only done that once, and Pat and I did it together, and we pulled up a recipe for like homemade croissants, and I did not realize that at least this recipe, you had to let it sit in the fridge overnight twice.
Yeah. Oh wow, that
yeah,
one
it was
longer.
Like 2 nights.
Yeah,
in the fridge.
Wow.
So we like stupidly didn't read the recipe ahead of time, and we were like, all right, got all the ingredients, here we go, we can't wait to have croissants later today. And okay. Then like we didn't actually get to have them until like 2 days later, but they were still really really good. They turned out really really delicious, but it was great. Just a process.
Yeah, definitely it was a process. And I you know, I always do this, don't I started at like 8 o'clock, which meant that the first day, because there's several like 1 hour refrigerations between folding.
Yes.
That I was up until like what 11:30 or something. Starting it. But yeah, it was well worth it, and I'm super excited to try it again. And now, Hannah, my dear, what's been tasty for you this week?
I've had trouble deciding because I don't know. I've had a lot of really tasty things this week. I just made, and I'm gonna talk about this. Something I just made is like a it's really really good. This homemade salad dressing, just to go on the salad theme, the summer salad theme.
Okay. My eyes are wide open.
I have been really obsessed with making lots of different types of homemade salad dressings lately. I don't know. I'm not against store-bought salad dressing. I use it all the time, but homemade salad dressing is just, it tastes so much better and so much fresher. So I actually just today made a, like, it's like this bright green creamy salad dressing. It's got, I packed it with like cilantro and parsley and avocado. I put avocado in there and olive oil. I even put some green onions in there. What else did I do? Garlic, salt and pepper, lime juice, but I think lemon juice would be just as good. And like blended it all up, and some water to thin it out. Oh my gosh, it is so good. And it's like creamy, but it's not too thick. But I've been, I actually, right before we hit record, I was dipping carrot sticks in it. It was so good. Like so much flavor from the herbs, from the cilantro and the parsley. Like,
herbs so make good. A huge difference.
Yeah, fresh herbs, such a difference.
I've been really obsessed with chimichurri lately. Ooh, and just like having that hit of parsley, cilantro, and lemon, like I found it like as a really good all-purpose kind of like sauce for a lot of different things, like just putting, using it in cooking and other stuff. So yeah, I agree with you. Like that herb kick is so refreshing. Actually, I'm hoping maybe you can off the pod give me a recommendation for a salad dressing that I can make today, because tonight I, so mom's garden, mom has a new garden, and I clipped off, she gave me romaine and kale. So I want to make a romaine and kale salad, and I have bacon that I'm going to cut up and put into it. I guess like I could make a Caesar, but I don't have to, like I could make anything. So if you have a suggestion for something, I would love that.
I think you should make Caesar, and I have a really, really good Caesar dressing recipe.
Amazing.
I'll send it to you. It's so good. We actually have it in the fridge. We had it last night on a salad.
Oh, perfect.
And you should make, if you have time, it really only takes like 20 minutes, but you should make homemade croutons to go on the salad.
Oh, yeah.
If you have bread. You
know, I have bread.
Or like even the butt ends of bread, like you can use those too.
I save the butt for the end and then I make a tiny sandwich. I can definitely use it for croutons.
I use mine for croutons. I literally save them and I make croutons or soups. Okay, I'm going to send you that recipe. And for everyone else, you can check out my Caesar salad dressing recipe too. It's on my website. And I'm actually going to put this green salad dressing recipe on my website too.
Oh, so, yes. Yeah. You should put it in the description too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I'll drop it in the description. All right, you guys. Well, thank you so much for listening once again. We will chat with you guys next week. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. And yeah, thanks for being here.
Tell us if you thought it was gruel. And and yeah, we hope you liked the double dose of episodes this week. Tell us what you thought of that.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can keep this party going.
Yeah, keep the party going. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.